Could technology actually empower you, the consumer, to get what you want from a company? And maybe make companies turn a better profit at the same time? Get ready to have your consumer mind blown on this week's Radio Berkman. Most of us take our one-way relationship with a company for granted. Even in these days of Amazon and iTunes, Zappos and Peapod, our relationship with a product provider involves a lot of searching to find what we want and a lot of guessing on the part of the retailer. When we finally find our product, we have to exchange a great deal of personal and financial information before we can even check out. And for every online retailer we interact with, the process has to be repeated all over again. And take the case of the independent musician or radio station. If you want to throw them a few bucks to support their work, you can spend 3 minutes or more just entering in profile information before you check out. For institutions that depend on charitable support for their product, those minutes wasted can mean hundreds, if not thousands, of potential supporters lost. We may not view the minutes spent engaging in transactions as a great inconvenience right now, but a group of innovators are hoping to empower consumers to have a more direct relationship with the companies they purchase from and cut the red tape between what we want and how we get it. Doc Searles is a co-author of the revolutionary Clue Train Manifesto, a senior editor at Linux Journal, and one of the innovators behind what is called vendor relationship management. David Weinberger sat down with Doc to get a clearer picture of the market's potential future.
VRM stands for Vendor Relationship Management. It's actually something that refers to a more familiar business category called Customer Relationship Management. Most people don't know about Customer Relationship Management, but that's what gives them junk mail. It's what gives them call centers where they can't reach human beings and other things like that. I'm sure there's some good in the world that Customer Relationship Management does, but Vendor Relationship Management got named because it's basically the customer's side of what doesn't work with CRM that will help CRM get better while doing things CRM can't do.
Give the prototypical example of VRM.
Okay, well, probably the original example is actually what got it going for me many years ago was wanting from car rental companies what I can't get. Because they have not so much one size fits all, but they have I once had something called Searle's 14th Law, which said, whatever car you want to get, you're going to get a Chevy Cavalier, right? Now it's a Chevy Cobalt, right? There's kind of a bait and switch game they play, but for the most part, they only divide cars up by size. There's lots of amenities in cars that people might want that don't even make the listings. And it occurred to me that what most of us want out of, let's face it, you're renting something that's a $20,000 piece of merchandise is probably more varied than what a car rental agency wants to give you. I want a van that seats 8 in Denver for 2 weeks that has a roof rack. They'll sell you a van. They'll rent you a van. What doesn't work for us about things like car rental agencies or even hotels is that they're busy looking at us as populations and not as individuals. And very often what we want is as individuals. And there's a lot that we would like that are just not on their rosters. And there may be enough of us to want one thing to get them to put those things on their rosters. Or there's just forms of intelligence that we can bring to them that they're not welcoming right now because their systems are built for data minimization, more or less.
So typically, vendors will make an offer to us. They'll say a minivan for $60 a day or whatever it is if it's car rental. And VRM would invert that.
Well, it's not so much inverted. I mean, that was just – we need a visual here. David being frustrated. Be frustrating, David.
This is interview relationship management. VRM is about more than simply giving – customers a broader and more or finer range of choices.
Right. No, it's actually about giving customers a much bigger role in what happens in marketplaces than they have right now. What we have right now is a take it or leave it system. Our idea of a free market is your choice of a silo or your choice of a walled garden or your choice of, the latest version of any color you want as long as it's black. Now it's a larger variety of those things, but there's an awful lot of what people want that's not answered by what only vendors supply. What we've had ever since industry won the Industrial Revolution is a marketplace where the buyer, where the sellers rather, make all the rules. And so we're talking about the buyers making some of the rules. We're talking about buyers having not only much more to say, but better ways to say it, better ways to express their demands. So, for example, there's something we call a personal RFP. An RFP means request for proposal. This is a common term within business, right? So Boeing wants to order some tires. They put out an RFP to the tire makers, to Firestone and Bridgestone and places like that. We'd like to have something similar to like to that happening.
And when Boeing does that, they list all of the specifications and the
for
those particular tires, and the tire makers scramble to be the ones who win the order and at the right price.
Right, exactly. And then what happens is actually a relationship between equals, more or less, at the far end of that. A guy named Ian Henderson, who's a pretty active member of the VRM development community, is quite the authority on CRM, and he points out that there are, he's cataloged over 3,000 variables in company-to-company relationships, and there's just a handful in company to what they call consumer relationships, where what they know about us is very little, and the reason they don't need to know much is because they hold all the cards. In a company-to-company relationship, generally it's much more equal. There's a lot more to work out, as it were. And it's a lot more nuanced and complicated than that. Not that that's an ideal model. It just it just shows that there are many more variables potentially involved in a relationship than CRM systems let us have alone.
So the RFP system for the business to business, Boeing to the tire makers and so forth, that works because there's a limited number of parts, a lot of parts, but a limited number that Boeing wants. And as you say, this is more or less equal to equal. There are a limited number of tire companies that are able, that it's worth their business to retool to build the exact tire that Boeing wants.
That might
which
be
traditionally has not been the case for business to consumer, but that seems to be changing.
There's more to it than that. There's also that the tire business may know a lot more about tires than Boeing does, right? And have a lot more to bring to the table, and then they get heard, right? If Firestone says, you know what, we came up with a new rubber formulation that will land at 600 miles an hour instead of 300 miles an hour, and Bridgestone says we have, some other tread system that we use, this is interesting stuff to them because it matters to them.
So what has changed now in the environment, in the economy, in the technology landscape that makes it possible to think about doing the same sort of process that Boeing has used with its suppliers for much smaller purchases across a much broader swath of the population?
The simple answer is just that the internet is there. Okay, so the cost of communicating is actually quite low. The number of available standards and open source building materials is quite high. There are possibly a million open source building materials laying around in the world right now. Building solutions, as they like to say in the business world, is a lot easier than it used to be. Putting together something new, experimenting with it, prototyping it, kind of breadboarding it, seeing how it works in the world is easier to do than it used to be. One of the projects we're working on right now is the iPhone public radio tuner. The iPhone's the first place it's going. We chose the iPhone because it's very easy to develop for. What hasn't changed yet is the assumption that our choices should only be those that companies provide for us. We still make that assumption. We still assume that the seller is always in charge and that what we, you know, it's always up to the advertiser. It's always up to the big guy to tell the little guy what they want. This has been in force for a couple hundred years now or so. The seller has the pricing gun. The pricing gun was...
The thing that makes the
labels.
The
little thing that, you know, that's... there's an old Stephen Wright routine where he talks about, he got a hold of a pricing gun. He threatens to, if the grocery store doesn't hand over their money, he'll go down and mark down everything in the place, right? So the customer can have the pricing gun, we think. We think there are more circumstances in which the customer can not only have the pricing gun, but a demand gun that says more than what the sellers are only willing to hear. The problem with CRM systems and with loyalty cards and all these things that are ways that sellers have of controlling us as populations is the information that it excludes. There's so much they don't know about what we do want, and they're only guessing at it. Let's say I have a relationship with Wyndham Hotels, okay? I'm going to a big conference that's going to be near the Wyndham Hotels. It's going to be a tech conference. I know that their Wi-Fi system might get hosed. That was exactly the experience I had last week in Austin, Texas, for something called South by Southwest. Omni Hotels had all kinds of ways of telling me, like they gave me free Wi-Fi if I joined their loyalty program. And their loyalty program made a whole bunch of promises, like a newspaper outside my door that turned out not to be there. And it was because, they told me later, well, they're only surveying what people actually wanted, but the survey sort of suggested that they actually were going to do what most hotels do, which is give you a USA Today or something like that outside your door. All I cared about was the Wi-Fi, really. I could give me bad sheets, give me a toilet that barely works. I want the Wi-Fi, right? But that's pretty low on their priority list. And I would be loyal to any hotel that would give me good internet connectivity. There are a lot of people like me, but if they don't even have that listed among their amenities, they don't even know. Right. And if they reject me, you know, as a customer because I'm not in their loyalty program, they don't even know. They never get the clues, as it were.
So the hotel will probably respond to this by saying, I understand, Mr. Searles, you're talking about a personalization program, which the hotel is, we at Wyndham or wherever, we've invested heavily in because in the past, that's the story of the past decade, right, is the right. personalizing of marketing and making sure right. that you get the paper that you want and presumably it works, you know, you do get the paper. How does VRM, but VRM is not simply marketing personalization. There's, you're doing something more fundamental.
No, it's not about marketing personalization. So, it's basically, they're, at its simplest form, VRM is about tools that make you independent from vendors like the hotel chains, like the car rental companies, and better able to engage with them. What makes these things extraordinarily useful is that these three things we call NEA. Nobody owns it, everybody can use it, and anybody can improve it. That's the case with email protocols. That's the case with the internet's protocols. That's the case with most open source code. If you have the chops and you want to improve it, you can go in and improve it. It's not just that the code is open, but that it's improvable, endlessly improvable for that matter. So we want to bring that same kind of thing to the marketplace, to ordinary communications between people. I can't improve a CRM system one way. I mean, let me go back to what I was saying before in a way, because this is what matters about what was wrong with the CompuServes and Delphi's and Prodigy's of the world. They were all silos. They kept you inside, right? We have that with every company we deal with now. They're all different, and they all have their own ways of making you talk, as it were. And that's basically broken. Even in very good-willed areas, like let's say in music, you know, Nine Inch Nails and Radiohead and Brad Sucks, like all are sell their stuff. They give their music away for free. But if you want to pay for it, you have to go to their website and go through their thing to pay it their way. It's the same way with all public radio stations. If you, all of them, you can support online, but you have to go to their website and do it their way. I support something like 10 different public radio stations. I've never been able to make a donation in less than 3.5 minutes. That's an eternity on the net. It's way too much friction involved. A lot of them, you can't do it at all because their websites are broken. We think if we come at this from the customer side with some standard ways of communicating, some standard ways of expressing the interest in providing information to the seller, whether the seller wants it or not, they can take it or leave it. In other words, Omni Hotels can take or leave the fact that I would, you know, when I'm looking for a hotel in Austin, I'm looking for one that's going to guarantee me, you know, T1 rates on connectivity around the clock, and I'm willing to pay for that. Whether they provide that or not, that's interesting information that I'd like to publish to the whole marketplace in a standard way that they can read. I don't want to have to do it a different way for every single one of those places. I want to do it one way for all of them. So what we're looking at with VRM are all those problems that can only be solved from the customer side. What are the things that only the customer can do because only the customer is in a position to do it? And then what are the standard ways we can put it together where all customers are going to be doing it roughly the same way? Like everybody does email with IMAP and POP3 and SMTP. What are the IMAP, POP3, and SMTP for the ways that customers can communicate with all sellers regardless of what they're selling?
What their personal preferences are, the information right. that's needed to do the transaction so it doesn't take 3.5 minutes.
Right.
All controlled, owned, whatever, I'm not sure what the word is, but you know, say controlled and owned by the customer. not right. distributed it at 1,000 different silo sites, each one with its own.
Right. So one of the things we talk about is how the customer needs to be the point of integration for their own data. That is the place where they control their data, they store their data. The stuff you mentioned, preferences, for example.
Or you like window seats, but only on red eyes.
Perfect,
right?
Perfect. Yeah, I mean a perfect
local
example.
Ones you like. Like
I want. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There are lots of preferences. For example, with airlines, I'm a very high status flyer with United because I fly almost nothing but United, but not as high as a lot. But the interesting thing is, I almost never put in for first class upgrade because I'll have to give up the window seat that I got in coach, and I don't know if I'll get a window seat in business class, because they'll give you anything. They think, oh, business class is good enough. You always just get business class. And so I wait till I get to the airport and I have to talk to a person there in person and say, I only want this for this reason, and then I can get it some of the time.
Because as some may know about you, you are one of the world's leading photographers of photos out of airplanes.
Yeah, I probably hold the record of photos shot out of airplanes, of landscapes. And it's probably, I think I've got 30,000 photos or so in Flickr.
All right, so we're in this position where your VRM makes an offer that will drive down the friction involved in a transaction, thus increasing the number of transactions, presumably. We'll end up with customers who are happier because they're getting the car or the window seat, whatever it is that they want. It's easier for them to do business. It picks up incremental business off the table that otherwise wouldn't have been there. What is the obstacle to the take-up of this? What's holding companies back from this?
Well, the biggest thing is we don't have it yet, right? So we're wanting the invention that mothers the necessity. I think what we've had conversations with people in the CRM business. We've had conversations with people at banks, at car rental agencies, at hotels, lots of these things. And a lot of them are actually eager to have it happen. The problem is we need to put it together. You know, it's kind of like we are in 1986 and we're trying to invent email. Any guesswork about me isn't as good as what I can tell a company myself. There's lots of really good guesswork. Amazon does a fabulous job of guesswork, but it's not good enough.
In making its recommendations.
Yeah, and making it's rare that an Amazon recommendation actually works for me. And then a lot of it that doesn't travel. I mean, I would like, this is one we hear about a lot, which is, you know, the recommendations that I have on Amazon, I'd like to be able to put in other places, but they live at Amazon. It's like Amazon owns that data, right? They own that data about us that we've made these reviews, we care about these movies, we bought these other things. We should have control of that data as well. That's not to knock anything that Amazon has done, but in the long run, it's going to be much more interesting to know or to be able to use like the full deck of cards of everything that we care about in a way that works for us and not just for them.
From my point of view, one of the strengths of VRM is that it looks towards network effects. That is what happens when you have lots of people doing it, and you can maybe do collective or collaborative action among customers and the like. But it doesn't require that. That you're giving individuals a reason to enroll, to start up doing this, and companies as well. It does not require everybody joining all at once. Can you give some sense of the rollout, in practical terms, the rollout, how you get from here to there?
We're concentrating on individuals first because that's kind of where the need is largest. Nobody's ever looked at the customer, the single customer, as an inherently empowered party in the marketplace. It's always been, if you're on the sell side, you want to aggregate as many people as you can in a massive way. If you're on the buy side, you think of how many of us is it going to take before we move the needle for the vendor. Where we're coming from with VRM is we want to start with the individual, equip the individual in a way that makes the individual much more empowered than they are now, and then do it in such a way that that can be collected as well. One of the things we're working on is a something we call pay choice. This is the pricing gun for the customer, but it's starting with things that are only free, that are free already, like blogs and podcasts like this, and all of public radio, all of public broadcasting, and especially music. Okay, music is free. You can get it for free. You can also get it for 99 cents. Those are your basic two choices right now. A few places sell it for 69 cents, but we have very limited data points about that. We don't have a way that individuals can say, you know what, I'd kind of like to pay a penny a song for what I hear on the radio. that's a reasonable number for me. I'd like to pay that. And make it not only easy to do that, but to aggregate the pennies across, say, one artist, right? So if a lot of us happen to like Sean Colvin, and we hear a bunch of Sean Colvin songs, but you know, the ones I hear aren't enough to add up to maybe 5 or 10 or 15 cents over a period of time. But if that gets aggregated with a whole lot of other people who also like that artist, then it rolls over at some bank account. So she gets, you know, a reasonable amount for what's been played on the radio, and far more than the RIAA, by the way, is asking for right now. That's an example of a collective effect. If I want a relationship with that artist and can express that in some way, and other people express it a similar way, we just want to make it possible for aggregate effects to also happen. We just don't want to begin there. And one of the reasons we don't want to begin there is that we don't want to start with the assumption that the individual is inherently disempowered, that the only way that we can deal with the big bad old companies is by ganging up and forming a union or something like that. And probably the last and maybe the most important reason, too, is to get advertising out of the room. As soon as you start talking in terms of groups, and as soon as you talk in terms of we don't know what we want yet, advertising comes into the room and says, we can guess at what you want, and we'll work it out for you, right? We'll just keep spamming you with better and better stuff until you buy it. VRM is almost the opposite of advertising. It's nothing against advertising, but advertising is guesswork, and by focusing on what people actually want, individuals actually want, we think we can find out a lot more and build better tools.
So if I'm Amazon, or Netflix, or whoever, let's say I'm Amazon, I've been tracking your keystrokes, your clicks, and I use this to come up with recommendations using my CRM system, and I count that as very valuable, as competitive information, because it makes, Amazon is thinking, presumably, that it makes Amazon a better experience for you than that other site that doesn't do all that clever tracking. What's the argument to Amazon to give up that information, to give it back to us so that we can, eliminating the competitive advantage that Amazon at least thinks it has because of that information?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure they need to give up anything. I mean, I think if we have VRM working right, everything we do with Amazon is known to us. So if they think they have it exclusively, they're wrong, because we also have it. And we have our transaction records. We have our own crumb trails if we bother to care about those things. I think it's normal for those companies to have the perception they're giving something up if the customer has more control about what they do with it. There could be, for example, our own terms of service that we will assert, and that's one of the things we're working on, is we have terms of service that we assert and not just them. A term of service is an aside might be, you know, I will pay you $1 if I reach a human being in under 60 seconds if I call for support. You know, or I'll give you $5, whatever it is. It's worth money to me to do that, and I'll just put that as part of my preference portfolio. It isn't so much what those guys are giving up. It's what they're going to be getting. That's not just theirs. That's the key thing. That my preferences are mine. They're not theirs. My transaction history that I choose to reveal to them is mine and not just theirs. And there are times that I'd like to reveal some of that and times I wouldn't. I wouldn't mind if I have to fly an American letting them know, hey, I'm a 1K flyer with United. That might be interesting to you.
And at Amazon, it might be interesting to them. That is, they might be able to give better book recommendations if, for example, I let them see my Netflix history.
Right. And yeah, exactly. And the main thing is that we want the individual to be in charge of their own data and be able to contribute as much data as they want. That's up to them, right? So we've not had this before, and that's, in some what it does, it just provides more intelligence to the marketplace. They all need to know they're not your only supplier. What will be a big part of VRM is providing ways for customers to not to get recommendations, but to actually get what they're looking for, you know, the exact thing they're looking for, which often is stuff that no particular vendor is selling right now. You know, I need a stroller for twins in Cambridge in the next 3 hours. There are lots and lots of requests that don't fall into any particular known category, or that require the user to do an awful lot of searching, going like a bee from flower to flower to flower to find what they want. Or you must neater, if we could publish, we could do the advertising. We could say, we need this or we need that, and who's coming through with it, and not have to go through something that's exclusive like an eBay or like even a Craigslist. I mean, Craigslist is wonderful and I love it, but it's still inside of Craigslist. Is there a way? And we don't know yet. We'll find this out. I mean, is there a way we can publish out in the open, kind of like we do with RSS? RSS is out in the open. The critical thing is not to think that the solution to every problem in business is yet another company that wants the customer exclusively, but rather giving the customer ways of informing the marketplace that allow the business to grow around that. So that's what we're working on.
Thank you very much, Doc.
Thank you.
You can follow Doc's VRM project at projectvrm.org. A more detailed talk from Doc, along with links to references made on this episode, can also be found on our website at blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. This episode of Radio Berkman was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. I took